Views and opinions expressed by the hosts are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of their employers. This podcast may not be suitable for children. Adults may find details triggering and/or offensive. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody. This is Priscilla.
And this is Norma.
And you're listening to It's a Mystery for Me. Welcome back to another episode of It's the Mystery for Me. To some people's dismay, I am hosting again this week. And Norma is, you know, asking the questions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like old times. If you go back to like episodes 1 through like 40 something.
Yeah. You know? I don't mind it at all.
Last week I had a few post-production edits. So I hope I can catch everything this week when I'm recording on these mics. I don't want to take them to my house. The mics.
Oh, I mean, I used to have to do that sometimes. Go back in and re-record certain parts
with the mic. Yeah, but the mic is here with you.
Okay, but you can take it with you.
I don't want to do it. Dang it. So I'm going to try to catch everything. But sometimes it's like I listen back to the episode.
So you recorded it on your laptop? Like through your laptop?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when I listen back to it, I just catch certain things that I'm not thinking about. Like, you know, I might be clarifying something. Like, I realized last week, for example. Oh, jeez. I'm so sorry. That's the alarm I use to get me out of bed. Because then I think it's an emergency. Anyways, last week, for example, we didn't mention, or at least I didn't mention, where the tattoo of his birthday was. And it was on her wrist.
Oh, I thought you did for some reason.
I don't think I did. Hmm. And I had to, like, say that. Because, okay. And that, I mean, that would be very important, right? Because yeah. It's in such an obvious spot. Like, you cannot hide that.
Yeah.
Right? So it's very blatant. It's giving, I don't give a damn what you think.
Yeah.
I'm gonna live my life, you know? So, yeah. Anyways, with that being said, I'll turn to this week's episode. So I watched an episode of Prosecuting Evil with Kelly Sigler. I think that's her name, Sigler or Siegler. And on this show, I think she's revisiting cases that she prosecuted or she was a part of in some aspect when she was district attorney. This episode aired in December of 2023, so just about a month ago. I also read articles from AP News, Fox News, and some court documents. But for a full list of today's sources, please visit our website, itsthemysteryforme.com, or click the link in today's show notes. This case takes us back to 2007 when people were wearing oversized t-shirts and baggy pants and earrings in both ears and listening to Party Like a Rockstar.
And Uggs with shorts.
And the Wipe Me Down remix. Anyways.
What a time.
And this case also takes us to Houston, Texas. This is the Tynesha Stewart case. Tynesha Stewart was born on July 10th of 1987. She has at least two sisters, Gayla, who appears on the show and is her oldest sister, and there's also a younger sister mentioned in articles, but she doesn't appear on the show. Tynesha really loved to sing. In high school, she was in the singing group called Four Part Harmony that her and her friends made up, and it was four of them, so that's why they called it Four Part. And they would pose by putting up four fingers in their pictures. They were all super close to each other, loved each other a lot, and spent a lot of time together, as I think is typical for teenage girls at that age. In high school, she was working at a pizza place and met Timothy Shepherd. He soon became her boyfriend, and Tynesha was smitten by him. The only problem was that there was an 8-year age difference. So Tynesha was 16 at the time and a junior in high school, and Timothy was 24 years old.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Tynesha's oldest sister, Gayla, says that she had no idea that Timothy was that much older. However, their mom had approved of the relationship and saw Timothy as her son.
Interesting.
Why you say interesting like that?
Because I just can't get over the age difference. A 16-year-old and a 24-year-old?
I mean, it is... It what is could they possibly weird.
Have in common, and what would a 24-year-old want a 16-year-old for?
I mean, we go down this road a lot in a lot of our episodes. I think the other side of it that we don't recognize is that, you know, when people are teenagers, sometimes they give their parents ultimatums, like, if you don't let me see them, then I won't do X, Y, and Z, or I'm not going to live here anymore. And, True. You know, you don't know what you'll do as a parent to ensure your child's safety and make sure that you can kind of keep an eye on them to a certain extent. I can imagine mm-hmm. that probably happened with a lot of people. Like, I think about Kylie Jenner in particular when she was dating Tyga. Actually, it was, like, almost the same age difference, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she could have just moved out. She was really wealthy, but I'm not a parent. I just know that, like, speaking to mom, sometimes you have to make certain decisions as a parent because that's what's right for your child, for that specific child. Like, one sibling might need something different than the other sibling, is what mom always told me. So, I mean, either way, is it right? No, it's absolutely not right. And Timothy should have pursued somebody his own age, mm-hmm. right? Either way, Tynisha did not let her relationship with Timothy distract her from her academics. She had received a scholarship to attend college at Texas A&M University, which is about 2 hours away from Houston, and she was not going to turn that down. Mm-mm. She even ended up graduating with honors. Her sister says she was in the top 3% of her high school graduating class. Listen, some people would just stay home, right? You're in a relationship. You might not feel inclined to go so far away to college, even though it's not super far, but you know how it is. But she was just like, nah, I'm finna go. That's what her friends say on the show. They were like, she was not even thinking about Tim in that way. She's like, no, I have to go. Like, this is an amazing opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. And if her and Tim were going to work out, they were going to work out. If not, exactly. then no. She celebrated her 19th birthday in July of 2006 and went off to college the next month. The show and articles differ a bit on this, but it looks like Tynisha wanted to put some space between herself and Timothy at that point. She told Gayla that he had actually been pretty violent towards her and had gotten to the point of strangling her. Gayla had instructed her to leave that ninja alone, basically, mm-hmm. right? Because Gayla speaks on the show and she says, you know, once that happens, you know, it just goes further than that. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, it's not clear on the show if she communicated this to Tim. Like, the show kind of alludes to it, but they don't really talk about that. So all of that to say, during the first semester of college, Tim calls her several times a day, and the conversations were mostly unpleasant. And they learn about this through the roommate, who is not featured on the show. So it's really just hearsay at this point. He sort of stopped at some point with the calling, the nagging, all of that. But then he resumed doing it in February of 2007. So now it's her spring semester in college. She was so annoyed by this and bothered by it that she really didn't want to come home for spring break because she just didn't want to be bothered by him. She had said to some friends that she was actually afraid that he was going to follow her around and stuff like that. And she just did not want to have to deal with that kind of stuff. But she ended up going home for spring break nonetheless. Of course, she wanted to see her family and her friends. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, March 14th of 2007, she hung out at a friend's apartment. A guy she was sort of seeing named Mark was also there. So she had met Mark while she was in college, and Mark was her age. Okay, so check off that box.
Good job.
Good job, right. Her friends were totally aware that she was talking to this new guy, and they said, you know, good for you. I mean, she was really happy whenever she brought him up. She definitely loved him, but Mark was a breath of fresh air. Things were just easier with him.
Were her and Timothy together at this point? Were they taking a break? What was happening?
So it seems like they were not together
okay.
at this point. But again, the show just... they're not really clear on it. Mm. And even the articles aren't necessarily clear. In the wee hours of Thursday morning, March 15th, so I guess the party goes a little bit late, right? Tim picks her up from her friend's apartment. She leaves her cell phone there at her friend's apartment and tells her friend, you know, I'll be back later to get it.
So she left the phone there on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She just figured, I'm coming right back, like, later on today, and I'll just get it. I don't know why. I don't know if it was charging. I don't know if maybe she thought Mark would call her.
Right. That's what I'm right? thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotta play smart, girl. Okay.
Don't want no extra problems.
Exactly.
So. Mm-hmm.
Her younger sister spoke to Tynesha around noon on Thursday, and she said that she was at Tim's house. It looks like she must have made that call from his cell phone or landline. Mm.
So she left the party around 5 a.m.? Did you even say a time or no?
Yeah, in the wee hours. So, okay. Like, around 3, 4 in the morning type okay. of thing. Mm-hmm.
And then she calls her sister at 12 noon that day.
Yes.
So she never went back to the party.
No, she didn't go back yet to get her phone.
Mm.
So her high school friends had started to text her on Thursday, and, you know, she wasn't answering. And the same thing happened on Friday. And when they did not get a response on Friday, they're like, okay, this is kind of weird. I mean, even when they didn't get a response later on Thursday, they thought that was weird because they're like, even if she's having a lover girl weekend or whatever with Tim, she would always answer us eventually. So it was just weird that she wasn't answering. And on top of that, she had plans with her friends to go see some sort of concert on Saturday. So they're just like, she definitely wouldn't leave us hanging like this.
But were they aware that she didn't have her phone?
They did not know that yet. And honestly, her not having her phone does not come up on the show. And I'll explain that in a little bit as to like how the show frames this part of the story.
Mm.
So the family called cops to report her missing on Friday, March 15th. But they were told to call back in a few days. The cops are just like, it's only been like 24, 48 hours. She might be out having fun, da-da-da, like, and they were just like, but this is not like her. They kept emphasizing that, right? Like, she's not like the other people you guys probably use this line about, right? Like, she's very different. She always talks to us. She's an over-communicator. And they still were like, no, well, call us back. And her older sister just talks about how frustrated she was by this notion, right? Her sister actually said on the show, listen, our entire family, we watch true crime shows. Like, we enjoy watching those kinds of shows together.
Oh, wow.
And so we understood the importance of, you know, figuring things out within the first 24 to 48 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those are very crucial hours. So, yeah, I mean, seeing how the cops were just like, not really on it, it really bothered them. A few days pass, and now it's Monday morning, and she does not show up to classes. And at this point, the family was convinced something bad had happened to her.
I'm just a little confused, because does the family not know about Tim?
So the show doesn't bring up Tim until the police come back into the picture in a few days. Then they're like, oh, and by the way, they introduce the character of Tim. But her family is aware that she was with Tim because her younger sister said that. However, the show doesn't say whether or not her family goes and looks for her at Tim's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say whether or not they go and get her cell phone back.
Okay.
It is said that the friend that had the cell phone did call the family to be like, hey, like, I haven't heard from her either. Mm-hmm. You know, because okay. This friend is not the same friend, I think, that she's going to the, like, concert with.
Okay.
So, the family is aware, but again, the show leaves a pretty weird gap here. But I would want to know from the family if they went over there. I feel like they probably did go over there. Right. They know where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But anyways, the show says that on Monday, when she did not go to her classes, her family was at this point saying, okay, something has gone horribly wrong. And they apparently held some sort of vigil that night. And they contact police again. And police are like, all right, we're going to look into it. So on Tuesday, March 19th, according to a document that was shown on the screen of the show, police go and meet with her family at that local church, which is near Tim's apartment. So on that day, the police go over to Tim's apartment complex, of course, to talk to neighbors, management, and Tim, right? But it doesn't look like Tim is home when they get there. So they talk to the building's assistant manager, who tells them some questionable things. First, the manager says that a neighbor had called in, a neighbor of Tim's, and had said that they smelled ammonia in the apartment, and it was like a very strong smell. The assistant manager also said that Tim apparently poured ammonia over his patio. He's on the second floor, by the way.
Oh.
And that the fumes were so strong that it was like making the assistant manager's eyes water. She said that she did see Tim taking out trash on Monday, but she didn't find that unusual until she remembered that the fire department had actually been at Tim's apartment that weekend. And the cops are like, huh? And she's like, yeah, like there was a fire on the patio apparently, and another neighbor called it in.
That's very random.
Right. What? The officer continues to talk to other neighbors, and there's one neighbor that says that they heard gunshots in the woods near the apartment at some point that weekend. So the officer just stops canvassing the neighborhood at this point and just calls the K-9 unit in, because they want the K-9 unit to come in and have the cadaver dogs search, smell for anybody, right, in the woods. The animals come and they immediately hit on a scent of death. And when they go deeper into the woods, they find a dead animal.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's not what I was expecting.
What did you expect me to say? They found
a body.
No. Nope. They found a dead animal. So at that point, the officer is like, all right, let me look into this fire, right? Like, firefighters and cops, we're close. I'm gonna just call them up. So he calls up the fire department and speaks to like one of the firefighters who was the one really like looking through the apartment, like putting out the fire, blah, blah. The firefighter says that the complex was filled with smoke when they got there, like pretty dark smoke. The highest floors for these buildings is just the second floor. So It's just like a few little houses of two floors, mm-hmm. right? So, like, they drive into the complex, and the complex itself is just, like, smoke all outside. So they're just like, what is going on? So they go to the source of the fire, which is Tim's apartment. They're knocking on the door. They hear somebody inside, but no one is answering, and they keep knocking, and then the deputy fire person shows up. I guess they're, like, the person in charge. And they just start banging on the door, and then Tim finally answers and lets them in. They're just like, what the hell? Is there not a fire? I mean, if there's a fire, don't you want us to put it out?
Did he call 911?
No. It was his neighbor's girlfriend who called 911. Mm. The patios that the neighbor shares, it's like, it's linked. It's just separated by a bar. So, like, the smoke was really coming into their unit.
Wow.
So they're just like, nah. They go out onto the patio, and he just has, like, meat cooking, so they put out the fire. And this part's interesting. Like, the firefighter looks around a little bit, and I wondered if that part was legal immediately, right? Mm. But I guess if you're a firefighter, you're making sure there's no other source of fires in the house, right? So you're just doing your job.
Sure.
So the firefighter goes into the bathroom, and he sees the bathtub is filled with ice and just a bunch of meat. And he's just like, what's going on here? And like, he's like, well, I'm like thawing meat. Like, I'm grilling, I'm having a barbecue.
Sound very sanitary.
Right. Right. Does it? Yeah. I don't know. I also said, is this a thing? Like, maybe people do this. One of the firefighters made it seem like this is a thing that people do. Like, it wasn't anything alarming. So the police officer on the phone is like, well, what type of meat was it? Was it sausages? Was it ribs? And he's like, it's definitely not sausages. It looked like it could be ribs. I'm not really sure, actually. And I know the officer was probably frustrated at that point. Like, damn, you didn't think to really ask. But I mean, he had said, I'm grilling, right? Not for nothing. Him not answering the door immediately, that should have been a sign. Like, let's call police officers here. Because why wouldn't you answer the door when your patio's on fire?
Well, was he still outside cooking on the patio?
No. He wasn't outside.
I thought you said he was, like, barbecuing or something.
He said he was barbecuing, but he wasn't on the patio. He was inside his apartment.
Why did I think he was barbecuing outside on the
patio? I mean, I don't think you're the only one who had that visual, and that's why you're here to ask questions.
Because I thought maybe he didn't hear.
Right.
So if he's on a patio, maybe sure. the door is shut.
Sure.
You know, behind him. So
yeah.
He's just...
No.
Okay.
No, because you could see the patio when you park in the parking lot. It's, like, facing the parking lot. No one was on the patio.
Okay.
So they're just, like, knocking on the door. So then I started to think, of course, like a lawyer, and think about, okay, let's say the police were called, right? In order for you to search someone's premises, you need either their consent.
Or you need a warrant.
Or you need some type of circumstances that allows you to do that. There are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I think the exception in this case would be that this is like exigent circumstances, like an emergency. There's certain ways to get around having a warrant and just being able to just go inside someone's apartment. And one of those reasons is if there's like this emergency, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, I think this would classify as an emergency.
Yeah.
But his lawyer could argue, well, the emergency was over. You guys put out the fire. So you had no right to search my client's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. Just thinking. Thinking out loud. Either way, in reality, the police weren't called. The firefighter put out the fire. He saw the tub. He left. That was it. So at this point, the police is now back at the church. And Tynesha's cousin comes up to them with a phone saying, hey, Tim's on the phone. So the cop, you know, takes the phone. He talks to Tim. Tim's like, I'll come down there and talk to you. Like, no problem at all. So Tim comes down there. He's super chill. The cop is like, just sit in the back of my cruiser. Anyways, detectives come by and get him and bring him to the station for questioning. And he goes with them voluntarily. He's read his rights and he's interrogated. He says that he saw Tynesha in the wee hours of the morning on Thursday. And during that time, she got a call from a guy. Presumably, it was the guy she was seeing who was named Mark. Okay, so this is where things get weird about details, because official court documents say that she left her phone at her friend's house.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So how would she be getting a call from this guy? In this interrogation, they're saying that she had her phone on her. I think sometimes court papers get messed up. But I don't know, honestly, like the whole show, though, revolves around her getting a call when she's with him. So let's just roll with that.
Okay.
It's kind of weird that court documents say something different. But okay, let's roll with her having her phone on her and getting this call. And so he says that, you know, he asked her who was on the phone and she didn't want to say, but apparently he knew it was a guy. Maybe he saw a name or whatever. So they started arguing. And he said that she didn't want to answer his questions. So she got up and left in the middle of the night and just walked out of his apartment. That was the last time he saw her. Her friends immediately thought that was weird because she did not like to walk anywhere, they said. Like, especially not in the middle of the night. I don't know who likes to walk in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary out there. So police used this as an opportunity, this conversation with him, to get his consent to search his apartment, right? Like, you have nothing to do with her disappearance, then you won't mind if we look around, right? And he agrees. They go over there and all they find really is evidence of a cleanup. There's a lot of cleaning supplies. There's a strong smell of bleach, ammonia, etc. But they did not have anything to really hold him, so they let him go. They continue to talk to neighbors, though, and learn more details. The fact that a neighbor heard a pounding sound for a half hour or so on Thursday. The fact that a garbage disposal was running continuously for hours on Thursday and throughout the weekend. The fact that one of his neighbors, who he always barbecued with, had asked him if he could have some barbecue and Tim said no, that he was cooking for a wedding. Another neighbor said that whatever he was barbecuing smelled like a dead possum. I don't know how that smells like. Like, what that smells like? That was oddly specific, but yeah. So, neighbors are just coming out the woodworks and just saying, listen, this and that.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I'm surprised.
I'm trying to envision what kind of neighborhood this was. I mean, they did say the apartment complex, so I'm just wondering, because they sing in like a canary right now.
Right. I don't think I could really, that we've ever done any case where
the neighbors are just bam, just bam, talking. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Let me say this and that. Yeah.
You're lucky if you got one person to talk.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Wow. When did that happen, the cleanup? Was that after the fire? or before the fire?
They didn't say. Like, the firefighters didn't say that they smelled cleaning products at that point.
Okay.
So it likely happened over the weekend, because now it's Tuesday when this is happening, when they go into the apartment and they talk to him and stuff like that.
Because he could argue, like, listen, it was smelling like smoke in there. I was just trying to clean up and get the smoke smell out of the apartment. I don't know. It's a possibility.
I guess, but they also said that there were, like, bleach stains on the carpet and stuff. Just, like, you know, the detectives that are working this type of case, they've been working these types of cases for decades. They just saw things that, to them, didn't look like someone that regularly cleaned the apartment. They said the rest of the apartment was dirty as hell, but they couldn't really find any evidence, like actual evidence. It's just suspicion at this point. And one more thing about like the timing thing, because it really didn't make sense, is her sister apparently heard from her on noon on Thursday, right? But like, what's his name? Tim is saying, oh, she left at like the wee hours on Thursday.
Right.
So that also, again, that's very bizarre.
Maybe the sister mixed up the days and it was Wednesday that she actually heard from her and not
That's
Thursday.
Also a possibility. That's always a possibility. You know, it's just, it's frustrating because, again, like, these are official court sources. And when it's like, you know, you're watching a show on it that is, you know, the family's involved in everything and it doesn't match up with court documents, it's just really confusing. Mm-hmm. But we're still going to tell the core of the story, or at least I'm going to tell the core of the story. So here we go. Okay, anyways, the family had not really heard anything from the police since they kicked off their official investigation on Tuesday. And now it was like Wednesday and they were just growing frustrated. I know it hasn't been that long as far as since the police started their real investigation. Mm-hmm. But you got to imagine it from the family's point of view. Like, we done told y'all since last Friday. Y'all didn't do it. Y'all didn't start searching. You know what I'm saying? Can you tell us something? Like, what have you found in the last 24 hours? Like, anything? But on the show, of course, the prosecutor, Kelly, she just says, you know, this type of situation is always really tough because, of course, the family wants updates, but the officers are afraid that if they give too much of an update, it could actually ruin the case. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things they have to keep close to the vest. But from what the family's saying, they weren't hearing anything at all. So they were just frustrated. Because the family was feeling so helpless, Tynisha's oldest sister, Gayla, decided to call Quanell X. Quanell X is a local civil rights activist in Houston, Texas. If there's police brutality, someone being treated unjustly, he just pops up and he's going to, you know, talk to the media, talk to the family, and try to resolve things. So he's basically a middleman between police and people of interest, or suspects, or victims, or, you know, whoever is interacting with the police, he's in the middle. A lot of Black people feel that they cannot trust the police. I don't blame them. Every interaction I've had has been a little tricky. You know what I'm saying? Except one interaction. Of note, Quanell X, he's not a lawyer. But here's the interesting part. He also gets a call from Tim's cousin, also expressing that, you know, he just wants to make sure Tim is good, that the police have brought him in for questioning. Like, well, he technically went in voluntarily, but that he just wanted to make sure his cousin wasn't going to be railroaded. And so Kelly on the show is just like, you know, Quanell X now has to walk this plank, right? Like, Tynisha's family has called you and Tim's family has called you. How do you resolve? Like, how do you reconcile both sides? Mm-hmm. The other thing is Quanell had a pretty contentious past with the police department and the prosecutors in Houston, Texas. Kelly seemed a little annoyed, honestly. But Kelly basically was saying, you know, he made things tough for us as prosecutors. He kind of always made us seem like the bad guys and that we never could do anything right. But his job that he has personally taken on is to advocate for victims, right? Mm-hmm. Or for, I don't know, other people dealing with police. So understandably, it's not going to be always about singing praises about prosecution and police officers, right? So whatever. So anyways, Quanell goes over to Tim's house, around Wednesday, March 21st. And he goes with Gayla, actually. But he tells her to stay in the car. He's like, let me approach him. I'll be back. He approaches him in a calm and loving way. He asked if he was hurt did the police brutalize you while you were in custody? And he says, no, no, sir. And finally, after talking to him for a few minutes, he asks him to tell him the truth. What happened to Tynesha? And Tim admits that he killed her. So Quanell X, not the police, got a full confession from Tim. Tim even went on to say where Tynesha's body was located. She's in the garbage can. And so at this point, Quanell...
Garbage can?
Yes.
I'm sorry, you like raced over that really quickly.
I know. So Quanell... Right. So Quanell, since he doesn't have the best, you know, rapport with the police, he actually calls a reporter instead. He talks to the reporter and he tells the reporter, find out who's like the lead investigator on this case and get them down here as soon as possible. And so the reporter becomes the liaison between Quanell and the police.
Interesting.
Police get there. And I should say the lead detective on the case is black, is a black man. So I don't know, but Quanell still did not necessarily feel that he could trust the police, right? Mm-hmm. I guess in his eyes, not every brother is a brother, mm-hmm. right? So the police get there, they go over to the garbage can, which is not in the same complex, it's like in the complex next door, and they open it and it's empty. So the garbage had been picked up. I mean, it's now Wednesday. So her body is likely at the landfill. And the landfill is basically a place somewhere in the state where they dump all the garbage, basically. And they do, I don't even know. I don't really know too much about garbage stuff. I guess mm-hmm. they burn some and recycle some and whatever. So at this point, Tim is arrested for the murder of Tynesha. And he's brought in to the station and he tells his story. He says that Tynesha swung a knife at him because she was angry that he was questioning her about Mark. And it nicked him in the finger, and that upset him. And so he proceeded to choke her until she literally wasn't breathing anymore. He panicked and decided not to call 911. Instead, he went and bought a chainsaw, and he came back and dismembered her in the tub.
Oh my gosh.
Not knowing what he's doing, he just said he just started cutting. Her sister's on the show. Listen, her sister Gayla, just, she is funny without trying to be funny. But she's like, that's some demonic Jeffrey Dahmer ash. Like,
it really is.
I was like, no, that is, though. He says he put some body parts in a bin that he threw in the trash, but I could not find any sources saying which body parts he was referring to. He ends up being held on a $250,000 bail. He hires a defense attorney named Chip Lewis. He was famous for defending Robert Durst in the case of, I don't know if you guys have seen the Staircase Killer stuff.
Yeah.
It's definitely on Netflix. I think there's an HBO special on it called The Jinx. Basically, he was caught on tape. Like, they were making a documentary about people around him who would, like, disappear, or especially it was, like, his wives that would disappear. And so, because he was, like, in the bathroom, he had no idea, he forgot he was mic'd, and he kind of, like, was reminiscing, I guess, about his interview, and he's like, I killed them all. That case actually is insane because he also comes from an incredibly wealthy family that owns, like, so many of, like, the important buildings in New York City. So, if you're interested, look him up, Robert Durst. But anyways, this defense attorney had defended him in a case, and he was able to walk on one of the charges. So the prosecution was kind of nervous. The way they described it was, if Chip Lewis was in the courtroom as a defense attorney, you better make sure all your T's were crossed and your I's were dotted. Mm. Chip Lewis was on the show, and the question comes up about why he would defend certain individuals, right? Like, what's his criteria? And he said, literally, quote, I will do the best job I can if my financial requirements are met. End quote. So basically, he's like, F morals, F ethical stuff. If the bag is big enough, sign me up. And he literally also said that he does not care if he doesn't like the person that he's defending.
I mean, I guess that's one way to think about it.
Listen, he gets right to doing his job, because the first thing he does is try to suppress the confession that Tim has given to police officers, which is a little hard to do. Because he was read his rights, right? So, like, mm-hmm. you can't say he wasn't read his Miranda rights. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he was necessarily coerced or anything like that. So the dangers of having the judge throw out the confession, I mean, it would literally ruin the case, okay? Because if you throw out the confession, then everything that comes after it, like the search warrant they end up getting, I'm going to talk about that in a second, the things they found with that search warrant, all of it has to be out. It doesn't matter. Let's say, for example, after he confesses, they get that search warrant based on the confession. They go to his apartment and her body's in the tub. They cannot use that in court against him. And you might be like, well, wait a minute. Her body's in front of them. Like, they literally found it. They can't use it. Yeah, that is literally how it works. Basically, it's the fruit of the poisonous tree. One thing is poison. Everything that follows is poison. That's why people are very, very careful, because you do not want the judge to say that something needs to be suppressed, that something needs to be kept out of trial. Something of this magnitude that could affect your entire case and impede justice from being served, right? So anyways, luckily, the judge disagrees with his motion and denies it and allows the confession to come in. The show talks about whether or not Quanell was actually familiar with the legal part of him inserting himself into the investigation, because by having Tim confess to him, he became a witness for the prosecution. So he was going to be called to testify about this confession. All right, but before we get to that, the family urged police to look in the landfill, right? As soon as they heard about Tim saying that he threw her in the garbage or something like that. Okay, but the landfill was huge and it would be costly, too costly. And so the police were saying that they were not going to search the landfill. And this outraged so many people in the community. They started getting so many phone calls, like the police officers and stuff, that they had to basically issue this emergency $500,000 budget to go ahead and search the landfill, because people were just up in arms about it. And then multiple people on the show say, well, I mean, if it was one of their daughters, their sons, right, they would search that landfill. Money wouldn't be an object. If it was a white girl that was missing, a white boy that was missing, money wouldn't be an object.
They would pass that budget immediately.
Right. If that person came from a very wealthy home, money would not be an object, right? Like, they were a certain member in the community, money wouldn't be an object. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they didn't really say much to rebut that on the show. You know, they didn't. I think that this kicked the police into action when it came to getting that search warrant based off the confession and searching the home, because they're just like, let's find something. Maybe we could find her here. And like, what if he's lying? Because the detective on the show says, listen, when people give confessions, we call it the 80-20 rule. 80% of it is the truth. 20% is lies. Usually lies to make that person feel better, make them feel like what they did wasn't as bad. They're like praying that this search warrant turned up something so that maybe, you know, they wouldn't have to search the landfill. At least that's what I think it was. Okay, so anyways, they searched the garbage disposal that's in the apartment, and it turns out that there are teeth and bones in it.
Like the garbage disposal in the sink?
Yes.
Wow.
Remember a neighbor said that they heard it running constantly? They also take a closer look at the patio that's below his apartment, and there are bone fragments that I guess have slipped through the cracks of when he was grilling. Turns out that he was also burning her. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So he did not toss her in. And that's what I meant when I said like certain body parts. He didn't say which body parts. It's because he burned the majority of her. So what the neighbor was smelling when she said it was a dead possum, it was a dead person.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And that's why he didn't offer his neighbor any barbecue.
Did he eat her too? Is he a cannibal?
So no. It doesn't come up about him eating her or anything like that. Mm-mm. He just burned her though. And so when he's burning her, certain things are falling through. And so when they check the neighbor's patio, they realize that there's bone fragments there. And when they run all of this, of course, in the lab, it comes back as a match to Tynesha. And so they tell her parents, like, you know what? We're not even going to have to search the landfill because he definitely burned her. And here are like the bone fragments to prove it. Here are her teeth. Here is this and that. And we'll come back to Tynesha and this whole burning of her and things of that nature in a few minutes. The trial finally starts in September of 2008, so about a year and a half after Tynesha's murdered. During the trial, the media learns that Tynesha had endured physical violence from Tim, that he wouldn't leave her alone, even though apparently she said it was over. That is what comes out at trial. So Mr. Lewis, who is Tim's attorney, is saying on the show, you know, it was really hard to discredit the prosecutor's argument because there was nothing, not a blemish in Tynesha's past that he could use against her. He said her record was that perfect. Mm. Tim does not take the stand, and for good reason. His attorney did not want him to be on the stand because, I mean, the story was so damning. How do you flip that, right? Unsurprisingly, Tim was found guilty of the murder of Tynesha. And unlike many other states, Texas has a punishment phase of the trial. We typically see a punishment phase in death penalty cases. This was not a death penalty case. In Texas, in this phase, the defendant can have the jury decide on the punishment instead of the judge.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. So during this phase, both sides make opening and closing statements, and the defendant is also able to put on additional evidence that they didn't present at trial, or maybe it was kept out at trial. They can call witnesses and stuff like that. Tim decided that this was a great time for him to actually get on the stand, and his attorney apparently advised him not to do it, but he did it. And the prosecutors were elated, of course, because, listen, Tim getting on the stand meant that they had a chance to show him as the monster that he was, or that he is. At one point, the prosecutor asked Tim to demonstrate how he strangled Tynesha, and not only that, to demonstrate on her in front of the jury. There is a picture of Tim with his hands around the prosecutor's neck, and let me tell you, it's a very powerful picture. If it was that powerful on a computer screen, imagine how powerful that was for the jury to see it in person. The prosecutor also said that she was saying something like, and then you burned her body on the grill. And Tim interrupted her and said, it wasn't a grill, it was a smoker. Which she believed showed the jury how callous he was, how evil he was. You're pointing out such a tiny detail about the method that you used.
Yeah.
So, of course, I Googled what's the difference between a smoker and a grill because I didn't know, y'all. A smoker apparently uses lower temperatures to cook, but the food comes out more flavorful. They said if you're, like, someone who eats beef, that...
Like ribs, I think.
Yeah, that a lot of people might get that, but it's more expensive. And that a grill, it's easier to use, but at the same time, it's easier to burn food on a grill. Mm. And grills are cheaper. Grills are normally what people have at their houses, basically. Mm-hmm. So the most time Tim could get for this was life in prison. And the jury sentenced him to 99 years in prison. They just basically said, yeah, you ain't never getting out.
Yeah.
Ever. Okay. So back to Tynesha's body. So Tynesha's body was never recovered. The NBC article that I read does seem to question this, though, and the rationale behind this is science. To burn a human body, it needs to be a high temperature, and grills cannot reach that. So, of course, I made a Google search. Of course, the FBI is probably like, why? Why are you searching this? I'm like, how hot does the temperature need to be to burn a body? Like,
oh gosh.
Imagine the FBI is like, what the hell? But according to Google, for cremation, you need a temperature of 1400 to 1800 degrees Fahrenheit. Grills typically can only go up to 600 degrees Fahrenheit. The neighbors actually said that the grills were burning for days. The grill, the smoker, whatever he wants to call it. I think he had a grill and a smoker, but that it was continuous.
Wow.
And like I said earlier, the appeals document also states that he threw certain body parts away, but he does not say which body parts. And nothing I read, including the appeal he filed in 2018, which was denied, said anything about what body parts they were. Which makes you wonder, should the police have conducted a search?
I mean, it's really tough because with the landfill, there's a lot to go through.
Right.
And it's been days.
Yes.
So I don't know that they would have been successful.
Right.
I don't know. It could really go both ways. They could have still have tried and used the funding to look for her, but I just don't know that they would have actually have found
anything.
Yeah, parts of her. If they had moved faster, then yeah, sure. But by the time they're doing all that, it's been over a week, right?
Right. If you're wondering if Quanell ever testified, he did testify during trial. He didn't plead the fifth, which means, you know, that you're not going to talk, right? You're not going to answer questions. He answered every question in the prosecution's favor. Since that time, him and the prosecutor's office and police officers apparently have a better relationship. The prosecutor said that they understood his point of view. Like, they took the time to understand his point of view after that. And her sister kind of ends the show, along with Kelly, just saying that, listen, if anybody ever puts their hands on you, you need to leave the first time. Because it can only escalate. And that's what happened in this case. It escalated to a point where there was no return, unfortunately. Her sister broke down at the end as well, just saying, you know, that they were not able to bury her. They weren't able to do stuff like that because they never got her body. And she just feels lost and broken without her sister and wished that she could have done more. And that concludes the case of Tynesha Stewart. Tune in next week for another new episode of It's the Mystery for Me, and stay safe out there. Stay away from the Tims of the world. Mm-hmm. Get away from them. They ain't no good, y'all. Bye.